that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Oh, and Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find it flick that monster Boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Are you ready to mustache? It's season 7, the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo presents free mustache rides. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am super happy to be joined by my friends. Oh, who's the first friend today? It's going to be Nick Boxer.
I think I've gone blind.
Excellent.
which makes this movie perfect for me.
So you're suggesting it's a little dark. Is that it?
It may not have video on it.
All right, and we can hear Jim James.
No, we have.
Not sorry, you yet, just, Jack. Shut up.
I know.
It's Jim's
like
turn.
Nick's camera was on again for a second there, and that disturbed me.
Well, he's blind, so.
I will be too soon. Go ahead, Jim. What were you saying?
I'm just pouring myself a Southern Comfort 7 Up and 3 green olives.
Who isn't?
All right, Jack. What are you pouring?
Oh, my heart out. Oh man. This is going to be an interesting one.
Well, this has been an interesting season, and we're only 2 in so far. So, I mean, I know that I've been itching for blaxploitation for a while because I'm a huge fan of the genre, and but you know what else I'm a huge fan of? I'm a
Nick
huge
Miley
fan.
Turning off the freaking camera. Nick. That was on.
I'm having a little trouble with it, okay? I'm blind guy operating a camera.
There's a button at the front of your that turns it off. Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna be honest, Edward Snowden warned us about this.
There's also the low tech version. Put tape over top of the
it's tape.
Turn off your Skype, not via your camera in your settings.
Yeah, you don't know what I'm dealing with here.
Skype, you're dealing with Skype. We're all dealing with Skype.
I can see the no camera thing so many times.
Okay, leave it on.
Yeah, it's good. It's fine.
How about I shut my monitor off?
Perfect. Hey, there we go.
There it is.
I'll solve the whole problem.
All right.
Can we try that again? Where are we starting from?
I don't know.
Okay, it's fine. It's 1 down and 2 to go, and my favorite part of talking about these movies is getting ready to hear Nick's explanation of the movie. And in this case, I'm really interested in hearing what you got to talk about.
God be with you.
Yeah. Good luck with this one.
Oh God.
If you can make the story make sense, then it would be great.
Yeah. wow. As I sort of implied, this movie is really hard to follow. because I don't believe the director, Fred Williamson, believes in lighting anything or taking close-up shots. So anyone speaking at any given time could be saying anything. and I'm going to use the actors' real names because I didn't bother to learn anybody's character names in this movie.
Fair enough.
I know that Jim and Fred were Cal and Jay.
Cal and Jay.
That's
yeah. I know. Yeah, but they didn't show. Jim and Fred didn't show up till an hour in this fucking movie.
Well, there's two movies.
Their names are pretty well useless. Thank you for sharing those.
May not have been that long.
55 minutes.
No way.
That's awesome.
I guess it can't be true. I have to look that up.
Well, let's keep
go to the 55 minute mark in this movie. Load it up right now. And I got on screen.
All right, keep talking.
True. Okay.
Keep summarizing. So far, perfect.
Joe Kelly
Jim?
Is the coach of a karate team.
Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly?
Jim Kelly, Joe.
Jim Kelly.
Okay. Joe Kelly, I believe, is a comic
coach
book
of a karate team on the West Coast. He challenges the West Coast to a big karate tournament and makes a bet that whoever wins this tournament gets $400,000.
I don't think that's at all what it is.
Let him keep going. But no, let him keep going.
It's not far off, but it's as good as.
Yeah, let him do the whole thing because then we can each do our own summary.
That may be the only effective way.
What did you pick up?
Just treat this as a starting point.
So Jim Kelly, I believe, hires Richard Roundtree to be the PR man for this huge tournament on the East Coast. And somebody on the West Coast hires the mob for some reason to, like, hold the money for this bet or some ridiculous blaxploitation reason I don't understand. And Jim Kelly and his team win this tournament. However, the mob doesn't want to hand over this $400K, so they shoot Jim Kelly. Now, Jim Kelly and Richard Roundtree sort of have to hold up and figure this whole thing out because they're not leaving without getting paid. So they sort of get into a barn out beside a bar where the girl that Jim Kelly is seeing is a works. I don't get this. And when Jim Kelly gets in trouble, he just calls his two buddies to, drive across the country to save his ass, because we're supposed to sort of know this is a sequel to Three the Hard Way, but in no time is that made clear.
It's not the sequel to Three the Hard Way.
What's the yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Look it up.
Yeah, I did look it up.
What is it a sequel
it's
to?
It's not a sequel to anything.
No, it's not. It's a totally self-contained movie.
Okay, well, Jim Brown and Fred Williams drive across the country, and they fight a lot of white guys in weird pork pie hats.
That part is true. Now you got something I can agree with. 35 minutes, by the way, when they show up. 36. 36 minutes they show up.
Which is still a lot of the movie.
Oh yeah, that's a
still quite a lot. Yeah,
but and then
we're never gonna have Richard Roundtree on the screen with everybody at the same time. But
yeah, yeah. Well, that's the next question. How long until we see Jim Brown and Richard Roundtree again after that first 36 minutes?
Enough that I was starting to count whether I would have to put in the mustache modifier for Richard Roundtree having vanished from the movie.
We don't have Jim Kelly show up again until the very end. So he's one scene where all four of them are together. So here's the thing about it. I can't say you're right or wrong with that explanation of the story, because who the hell knows, but Nick, I don't think that was not my interpretation of most things, but it might have been accurate. But I can't say, yeah, Three the Hard Way, they did that movie. It was like 1974, had Jim Kelly and Fred Williamson and Jim Brown, no Richard Roundtree. And Williamson wanted to do the sequel. He pitched this to the studios as a sequel, and no studio was willing to do a sequel. So he just made this film, even though he couldn't get the rights to make it, and gave them different character names and everything. So it's a pseudo sequel. You're sort of right, but it also isn't. It's different characters and different everything. It's just that, yeah, it was his idea for what would have been a sequel if they had greenlit it.
And what a shame they didn't.
Well, we got.
Well, this. I'm really glad I didn't learn those names then, because that would be really confusing.
So my guess at the plot is that the mob loaned the guy that was putting on the tournament $100,000 to put on the tournament. That is separate from the $400,000 that was the bet. So the $400,000 was sitting in escrow, but someone was able to take it back out of escrow. I didn't know was a thing. I thought that was the whole purpose of escrow, was to not have that happen. But
yeah, there was a bet, but there was a $400,000 prize for winning the tournament.
That $200,000 went in from each side, I thought.
Yeah.
Yes. So.
But yeah, and Jim Kelly spends the whole time going, "Oh, something's wrong. I'm not going to win," and then he wins. And then, yeah, Richard Roundtree is like the manager or something like that. He goes to get the money. Strong arms. What's that actor's name again? Joe Spinelli, or
Spinell?
The guy with Spinell, yeah. The guy who was the star of Maniac. Yeah.
Best scene in the movie.
Oh, it was friend. Well,
also the only lighted movie. scene in the movie.
It's the bank manager scene, right? That's what you're talking about.
No, in the restaurant.
That's the scary part, folks.
this is not gonna be, we're not gonna talk about this movie at all, other than attempting to figure out what the hell actually happened to it.
I know several times watching this movie, I said out loud to the screen, I don't know why anyone is doing anything right now. motivation aside, I couldn't figure out why, like, anything plot-wise was happening. Like, it was this whole chasing around the $400,000 that was supposed to be sitting in escrow seems to occupy a huge amount of the plot. And everyone seems really ready to give the money over, like, as soon as they're confronted in any way. Like, it's like they were hoping no one would ask for it. Like,
well, to me, my guess on this movie was that it was a great way for the four of them to somewhat get together and kick ass.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because that's about all they did.
Really care about, right?
Yeah.
I think my favorite part of that is that there's like way too much of the beginning of this movie is the karate tournament. It's like better than 10 minutes of the first of the movie.
But it's arguably the best part. Those guys, because the music, there was just this great, great music score that was great, terrible music score. And then these guys who were fighting in this tournament, and they're supposed to be martial artists, but apparently the martial art they studied was close your eyes and swing wildly, foo. And
yeah, it looks like they're like it's weird, like it's like stock footage from a karate tournament or
but it's not kind they're of paid thing. Those guys are paid to be doing it.
So what they did was they held real fights and filmed them, and the winner would get $400 and the loser would get $100. Nice. And then put that in the film.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that all happens, and then but then when we finally get Cal and Jay show up later trying to, you know, who are vaguely related to the other two. Like they're investors, I think, is kind of how it's structured, but they don't know any martial arts. Like they're not martial arts guys at all. Like they come up, they show up and then it's just guns and shooting.
And describes himself as a black Clint Eastwood who does martial arts. That's how he describes himself. not in a movie, in real life.
Yes, but
which they decided to hold back from this film, apparently.
Oh, and in most of his movies. But the weird thing is that in the write up on this, it's on Tubi, it says a pair of tough cops.
I know.
And I'm like, really? I had no idea that they were cops.
They show up in limousines with women draped all over them. I'm like, cop salary.
And that was like
strangely, about, that's what they were cops.
IMDb says. IMDb says that too, yeah.
And that was 20 minutes of the movie was them driving in.
Oh, man. I was going to save that for the Boogaloo because that is the single most Boogaloo moment yet. I think that is the highest WTF moment of all time. So I think it tops the beginning of Ninja 3. That drive in that literally took 2 minutes. Nothing happens.
And it's both of them, and I didn't realize that it was both of them in limousines.
Yeah, they're just
because the one limo parks, and then the next limo is like still driving, and I'm like, huh? Didn't the
clearly
limo
the
just
same
pull
limo? They just filmed it twice.
Yeah. Well,
filmed it doing the same turn twice. But here's the great part: like, so we can properly explain this to people. It shows a dashboard cam of a car, no explanation. And usually that'll happen maybe for like 10 seconds, and you'll transition. It goes on for a minute and 15 seconds. I counted. Of this car just driving along from this dashboard cam, slowly. I was laughing at this point so hard. Nothing's happened. It's not driving fast. Nope. It's like driving, parking behind other cars, starting again. Nothing happened. And it's so long. And it's unbelievable.
That right there, that's paradise by the dashboard cam. That's what that is.
I'm laughing so hard at this. Wow. Watch it 3 times. I'm like, something must happen somewhere in the background. Nothing happens. And then finally it cuts to a different angle. Now we're a camera following the car for another 45 seconds where nothing happens. And it's just the car driving. But at least the song was great. It was it was so Boogaloo through the roof. And I'll set Jim Brown and Fred Williamson looking all great.
Well, basically, with Jim Brown and Fred Williamson, like their roles in this case were to fake that they were doing some private investigating style work, shoot all the white people because everybody that was white was bad, pretty much, except for
the
girl.
My God, there's a lot of shooting in this movie. Killing 10 people at a time.
Oh,
and
yeah, I'm surprised that the bad guys had enough.
No reloading, but a lot of shooting.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, keep going, Stan.
But yeah, it was just one of those cases where and then they killed everybody. And this is where I figured they must have been cops because the sheriff that was there kept letting them go for whatever reason. Because it's just like, well, yeah, I know you're killing guys and all that stuff. I'm sick and tired of having to be called to scenes where you guys have just gotten through killing 15 people. But, you know, I can't do anything about it. So
explain this, police. You have to explain this sheriff better because he's like 90 years old. And all he does is show up and go, man, you guys are annoying. You keep doing stuff that is illegal. Stop it. I'm like, I don't know. Like, the very first scene you see him in, Richard Roundtree shows up at this mechanic's. He takes this mechanic. He starts and asks him a question. The mechanic doesn't want to answer. So he just starts beating the shit out of him. He takes him and he puts him underneath the hood of a car and he's slamming it down on him. And the sheriff walks up and goes, hey, stop that. I'm like,
that mechanic gets beat up a lot in
this.
Oh,
yeah.
Everybody gets a turn with the mechanic.
Instead of saying to them, saying, hey, I'll take, and then the sheriff is just like, whatever's going on, don't worry, I'll take care of it. You don't have to. And then, you know, basically, and I'm like, why would you not, like, that's assault, motherfucker. Like,
and like, murder, what, and, you know, there's lots of.
What state
yeah,
are they
yeah, but
in?
When you kill somebody with it, when they shoot the two guys, and right in front of the cop, and the cop asks them, We better go downtown, go down to the station. They go, what? You saw what we did?
Yeah, yeah.
You can fill up the reports. That's okay with me.
Some guys came up and shot at us, and we shot back. You know as much as we do about them. I'm like, that was their defense.
And then it's just like, well, you staying at this hotel? Because I may want to see you. It's just like, well, okay, well, maybe.
I bet the Holiday Inn gets a lot of limos.
Oh, yeah. And give me my two favorite sheriff moments. Number one, when they show up, when he brings them into the station, he questions them. They say, well, you want us to leave town? He goes, no, don't bother. So they get up, they start walking. He goes, wait, yeah, no, I changed my mind. Do leave town. It was like 3 seconds later. Okay, and I love right at the end when they show up where Jim Kelly is, where he's being shot, and the two, Jay and L or whatever the hell their names are, they show up and they're, you know, talking to Jim Kelly, and you're like, we have no idea how they found it, no idea what clues led them there. All of a sudden, the sheriff and one of his heavies walks in, and he goes, "Hey, did you?" They're like, "Hey, how'd you find us?" And he's like, "How'd you get?" Well, he asked them, "How'd they get here?" And they said, "How'd we get here? How'd you get here?" And his response is, "What do you mean by that?" The worst sheriff in the history of Finland.
So they. So these two guys are going in, Jay and Cal go in to search a place and to shake someone down. And they get into a gunfight in this apartment building, and they kill, I think it's 6 or 7 people. And the sheriff takes them into the station and checks to make sure they have a carry permit for their gun. That's his entire investigation.
What about the actual ending of the movie? They just show up, they shoot a bunch of people, leave a bunch more alive. I don't know who they were trying to kill, if they killed those people, why they left the other people. And then they're at the hospital and they're all in the beds and everything's fine and it's over. Like it's like I'm like, but you left half of the people in the building alive.
all the main bad guys were long dead. It was just down to the henchmen at that point.
Yeah, and yet you bothered to show up to kill them and didn't kill all of them. Because they're shooting at you, you're driving away.
Well, yeah, because Fred Williamson took a bullet at the end, and that pretty much, like, and they started running away from at that point. And then there was one last shot where they shot and killed somebody, one of the bad guys, and as they were driving away on the truck. And it's like, okay, that's it. We're over. We were done.
Well, and at one point they're like later on in the film, they're trying to track down this guy that's like their nemesis apparently, and they break into his house, harass his wife and her friends, and then they kidnap the guy, and I'm like, how is any of this defensible as self defense? Like this, you can't self defense a home invasion.
It was at that point that I thought to myself, they just walked in and everybody's like, I'm like, this is like the third time that they just walked into a room. I'm like, nobody locks their doors in this house.
Well, no, because it's not like there's the mob or anything. Oh, wait.
This movie is.
Oh man,
this movie is incredible. I am curious to see how it scores. Do we want to go there, or do we want to try and recap it, or did we already do the best we could?
I don't think it's possible to recap it any better.
I both understand more and less.
I think as long as you, I looked at it as two movies. I looked at it as the first 36 minutes, which, you know, made relatively. A little bit of sense other than the betting and the money, like the money never makes sense throughout the whole thing. And then I look at it as the rest of the movie, which was like, oh, okay. There's basically Fred Williamson and Jim Brown are kicking ass. And so I'm good with that.
And then Richard Roundtree shows up.
Yeah. That's right. And actually my question with Richard Roundtree is that somewhere between 1971 and Shaft and this movie, Richard Roundtree stopped looking like a badass and started looking kind of like an accountant.
So true.
It's like, you know, you look at Jim Brown and Fred Williamson and they're fucking badass. Like they never stopped looking badass. And then Richard Roundtree, it's just like, yeah, he looks a little, you know, look a little rounder, just a little like, you know, dressed up. And it's just like, oh, wow, you're not like Shaft anymore at all.
No, he's like, if you're going to ask somebody for directions on the street, that's the perfect guy to ask.
Yeah.
He just looks like he would know where to go.
But for mustaches, very approachable. Man, oh man, Fred Williamson, that mustache is top notch.
We had some excellent mustaches in this movie, and like even the villains, like minor characters often had great nicknames. Or great, not nicknames, sorry, great mustaches. I'm looking at mustache nicknames. So I forgot that was one of my gimmicks.
All right, let's go to scoring on this bad boy.
Fantastic. All right, in our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate each film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
I've watched a lot of blaxploitation movies in my time, and I have seen so many shitty blaxploitation movies. And one of the things that this one shares in common with those is the fact that there is no good reason for a story other than black guys kicking white ass. And that's pretty much this movie as a whole. It's like there's a certain level of cool because you have these awesome characters. And the fact that you've got Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, Jim Kelly, and Richard Roundtree, that just makes it more awesome. That brings the score up for me. Because originally, as I was watching it, I was just like, I think this movie's like a 4. But because those four guys are in it, I'm pushing it up to a 6. And it can't go higher because the story is incomprehensible.
I see your logic there, but I can't give it to him. I'm going with a 4. This movie exists because everybody had a hole in their schedule.
Pretty much. Like, literally, this
film... It's like, I got the weekend off. Let's make a movie.
Literally, they filmed it in 3 weeks because that was the time that Fred Williamson was available in between doing Vigilante and something else.
I'm so glad he directed it, too.
Oh, and wrote it. Don't forget, he wrote it.
Didn't his son write it?
No, his son came up with they co-came up with the story, but he actually did the screenplay. But he gave his son the credit because he wanted his son to have the credit.
How old was his son at this point? 10?
No, I can't see you because you don't have your camera on. Did you use screenplay with fake air quotes?
Yeah. Play might be a push.
Yeah.
Story idea, I think. Yeah, it's. Yeah, you gave me a score of 4. I'm going to go with the 7. Number one, only because this movie's terrible, but everything about it that is entertaining comes from the fact that it's so bad, it's terrible. Giving it that high schlock. It's the schlock that gives it the entertainment, not the fact that it's in any way, shape, or form well made. Every choice they make from about 20 minutes in, but before these guys even show up, the first little while it's not so bad, but for 20 minutes in, every single choice is schlocky and bad and incomprehensible as hell. And so that's perfect. So a 7 plus, you know, it's also got all those fantastic flavor savers on the people's faces. And that's worth something.
I don't
mouth,
know. Where...
Mouth merkins.
You are a Google ninja.
I don't know where any of you guys are coming from this on this movie. It's a bad black machine wasting the mob. That's the tagline for this movie. It's Jim Brown !! Fred Williamson !! Jim Kelly !! Richard Roundtree !! I don't think anything in this scene got a second take.
No. and I even saw I saw the boom as well, so I can pretty much guarantee that. Yeah.
That's what you said. You said there were no close-ups. There were no masters either. It was just more of the, like, I think you set up the camera and then put people in front of it, not vice versa.
Yeah.
I think this movie is everything that I want from a mustache movie and everything I want from this podcast. 10.
I understand it.
Everything about this is just like so crazy over the top. VHS, 3 o'clock in the morning. I can imagine me pulling this off the VHS shelf in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Well, and on Tubi, even the copy you have looks like it's from a VHS.
It does. That's one of my favorite things on Tubi is when there are quite a few movies on Tubi that start with a blue or red screen that clearly VHS capture.
The class of 1984 is that.
Oh, yes. Is it?
Yeah, great. And it says VHS Vault on it, and it is absolutely, it's got the tracking before, oh yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I've noticed a few movies that say Christine. VHS Vault, I love that. Did you watch Classic 1984?
I did, yes.
Great.
Is you guys, everybody watched it but me?
Yeah, it's
amazing. It's a favorite of mine. I love that movie.
So and I'm just wondering, we're not obviously, but good. Would it score? Would it be a Boogaloo classic?
No, it would. It would not. I don't think it would score well at all. I think it's a really good movie.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
I reject the way that you framed that.
I think it's less Boogaloo and more different quality.
I don't think it would score high, but it would score.
Well, it would.
I mean, the whole teenage prostitution ring would be. I mean, that was nuts.
You're hard pressed to have a movie come out at zeros. Like,
it would never be zero. Of course not. I mean,
it might be an experiment to put in a really mainstream movie, see if we can get just all zeros, all of us across the board.
But as it stands, we have
we're one down, four to go for categories here.
Jim, no, wait, you never said 1984. You said you disagree it wouldn't score, but you're saying
you've seen it. I said I haven't seen it.
Oh, I thought you had seen it. Okay. All right. I thought you
had. No, I'm too busy watching One Down, Two to Go.
You fool.
How many times have you watched it? One down. Are you going to watch it?
I'm going to watch it three, and it's one, and I've watched it once. So it is. All right, our next category is called More Heart Than Budget.
Well, I'm sure the budget can't have been much in this case, other than a bunch of buddies getting together to shoot a movie. And, well, although I think most of the money probably went into the martial arts tournament at the beginning of the movie. I would have to suggest, given that the way that it shot with very little story and very little actual quality of directing and stuff like that, then, I'm going to go with a three.
You know what? I'm going with the seven, just on the basis this movie was basically made because Fred Williamson saw his buddies weren't working, and he was calling bullshit on the whole Hollywood system that, you know, a couple years ago everyone was busy and they were making tons of these blaxploitation movies, and then they just fell out of favor and none of his friends could get work. So I think that's a good reason to make a movie, and a quality reason. And I mean, a lot of these movies, this one didn't quite come off the way that I think they wanted to, but I think there was some heart behind it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, literally, Richard Roundtree and Jim Brown weren't working, and Fred Williamson did this movie to get these guys work. Like that's pretty cool. Plus, he wanted to do the sequel to Three the Hard Way. It's just he couldn't get it done. And it was apparently still really hard to actually get this film off the ground, but he did it. He persevered and they got it done. So, and there is heart that way. I mean, the fact that there's just complete incompetence in other areas doesn't take away from the heart of trying to put it together. So I got a six on it. I'm not going to go any higher, but I got a six on it.
I think the description of how this movie got made of my pals aren't getting enough work and let's go hang out for 3 weeks and like make our mustaches look good. We'll have some other guys do karate because, you know, Richard's Roundtree's getting a bit round in the tree, if you get my meaning.
round in the trunk?
I think this whole movie, like I said, I mean, it all looks shot up with like single takes and they blow stuff up. That's about the most budget that they use in the whole movie.
they blow a lot of stuff up.
Yeah.
I'm going all the way up to a nine on this. I think there was a lot of heart for this.
Any desire, Stan, to readjust your score after that?
Nope.
Okay.
Our next category is called What the Fuck Moments.
Oh, God.
this movie was very interesting because I found that there was a lot of little what the fuck moments where, like, sprinkled throughout, where it was just characters would say things and you were like, really? What? Like, the sheriff was good for that. the main thing, of course, was the script. We talked about the ending. The ending was the ultimate what the fuck to me, where it was just like, what the fuck just happened? They shot them, sorta, and now the movie's over. That one, that one just kind of blew me away. And I had a great laugh. We talked about the, of course, the limousines, which were great. Just the way that things were arranged within the story was just ridiculous. But, and there were awesomely cool moments too, where the, you know, where Cal and Jay were just pulled out their guns simultaneously and started shooting almost simultaneously, shot down, blew up a couple of cars because they were shooting their guns. And I'm like, what the fuck? That's awesome. And so there's that, like, yeah, they're cool. And then you've got Jim Kelly in his fucking Ronald McDonald leather suit. And and that really just, you know, that's it. It's just like, if a person who worked at like a Shell gas station wore a leather outfit, that's pretty much what it would look like. And I don't know why we don't have them. I'm pretty sure we couldn't pull them off, but Jim Kelly can. And so overall, I'm going to go with an 8.
Speak for yourself, man. I can pull that suit off.
Oh. Yeah, well, turn that mic back off.
But no, I would like to take a minute to talk about gun safety. There is one specific scene here that's written in. It doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, but nothing this movie does. Where Fred Williamson finds a naked girl in a shower. Because I'm pretty sure Fred Williamson wanted to find a naked girl in a shower.
Makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, that's pretty much what he does.
Yeah, after some innuendo, he goes in the shower, and then they don't show anything. They just show the outside of the shower as he's taking off his clothes, one item at a time. The last item he throws onto the ground from, he's a tall man, so it's falling probably 4 feet. He just throws his gun onto the ground. Now, we've established already in this movie that we don't have to reload guns.
True.
So that could have gone off. That was a dangerous move and sets a bad precedent, period. You don't throw guns around like that. I found it profoundly disturbing that they depict any such act in that way. But yeah, that was the most boogaloo, like, I can't believe this is happening thing in this movie. I mean, it's all nuts, but that was just irresponsible. I need a score on that. Let's go with the 7. I feel confident with the 7.
Oh my god. That scene, what I love about that shower scene is he shows up, like I say, they show the girl in the shower, don't show any nudity. She's well lit, I'll give her that. And then it's just Fred Williams is like, yeah, sure, baby. And he walks in, like you say. And so he throws all his clothes outside. But he's also throwing her clothes outside, implying that she was wearing these, even though we'd just seen her standing in the shower. But they're not wet, which means that they must have just been in there, and he's like, fuck it, these are in my way too. Just throw these out.
Well, he didn't want to get them messed up.
He was wearing lacy underpants. I don't know about you, but I don't spend a lot of time imagining what Fred Williamson wears under his clothes. But
because he shot every scene in this movie with his shirt unbuttoned down to his navel, I'm pretty sure he wasn't wearing a bra.
I'd like to know how many changes of clothes that him and Jim Brown had, because it seemed like every 5 minutes they were dressing in a different pair of clothes.
Man, there's so many. We've already covered so many, but there's so many more. I like the scene underground there's a scene underground in a parking lot where he gets shot at, to Fred Williamson does, and their person's about 10 feet away from him, and he shoots, and they have the bullet missing him, so they show it, and it hits a post like 8 feet from him. I'm like, you're 10 feet away, and you missed, and you shot and missed by 8 feet. Like, if we're all supposed to be worried about him, that bullet needs to be close, not 8 feet away. I mean, stormtroopers don't aim this bad. This one, when they finally show up, I thought Fred, like, okay, number one, are we going to see a movie this season that doesn't have a rape scene?
Like, I'm not sure I'm going to see a movie this year that doesn't have a rape scene.
Good Lord. So, of course, the Jim Kelly's lady friend gets raped by the white dudes. So here's what I like. At the very beginning, Jim Kelly gets shot. Okay. Don't worry, Jim, even though I'm going to do a bunch of these, there's still so many left for you. I'll leave you the big one that I'm sure you'll bring it up. If you don't, I will. So there's these guys show up, they're shooting at him, and, or the one guy shoots at him and hits him in the shoulder or the chest. Actually, it's below the shoulder where they show it. Like, it's closer, like, you know, his partner's like, what are you now, an assassin? What are you doing? Trying to kill him? And then the very next time we see them, for no reason, they're both shooting at him and trying to kill him. I'm like, so what changed?
Thankfully, there was no bullet hole in his outfit.
There was no bullet hole in his outfit, just some blood. And he spends the next, like, 20 minutes just walking around. He never bothers to wrap it. He never bothers to tie anything around it. He just lightly holds it like, oh, man, this bullet sure is bothering me. Good thing I'm Jim Kelly, so I'm so tough. I don't have to worry about it too much, because he has enough time to fight somebody, doing a real Bruce Lee impression, like, unbelievable.
Well, that's him. That's always him.
Fart, right? Which he did not do when they shot Enter the Dragon together.
No, I'm pretty sure that he did. Almost any movie that I've seen him do, that's his style.
He wasn't making those sounds back then, so he must have picked it up from that movie from Bruce. But I know I just watched that movie for like the 40th time. I love that. Oh, that movie could score. I'm telling you, it could score. You threw me off there, Stan. I was in the middle of something.
Were you ever on?
Never. So yeah, he's just walking around like that. He's got that. His girl gets assaulted, sexually assaulted by these guys in an incredible scene where it's just a camera looking up at them and them saying crude things, but never too crude, because really this movie is weird in that there's a point where Jim Brown says bullshit, but it cuts out the shit part. So you're bullshit. it's almost like a TV edit of this thing. And you know, she's getting, you don't see anything. But she's getting, you know, raped. So Richard Roundtree shows up, and these guys hit him with a stick, and all this blood goes everywhere, and you're like, wow, they killed Richard Roundtree. Like, I thought he was dead. Next time you see him, he shows up near the end when they find Jim Kelly, and they're having a conversation with him, and he just walks in and starts talking, and they all just throw everything together, like, hey, you mean this? That means this happened, and this happened. I'm like, no, why? Why does it mean that? Nothing's making any sense. You're just throwing out stuff now, trying to put a script together. Richard Roundtree has this big bandage, white bandage on his head with no blood on it, despite the fact that he looked like he had been literally brained. The very next scene we see him in, no bandage anymore. And no scar, no mark, no nothing. It's just gone. Like, this movie has so many, every scene from 20 minutes in has a WTF moment. it's an easy 10, and I even left a couple great ones for you, Jim.
I think what's amazing to me is that not only did none of us follow the ins and outs of the plot of this movie, it's clear the characters aren't either. Like, not just the filmmakers, but like the characters can't follow the thread. At one point, they say, there's a scene where he's investigating where, like, he's trying to find the money that's supposed to be in escrow. He's hassling the bank manager, and the bank manager just says, like, you know, so-and-so came and got it. Who's that? Well, he works for Mr. Rossi. And you're like, okay, well, we got to solve this. And then 15 minutes later, they hear Mr. Rossi's name, and they're like, who the hell's Mr. Rossi? Wait a minute! Like, you only told two names at the bank, and you couldn't keep track of that.
I like that he's at that same scene with the bank manager. He's hassling him, and the bank manager says to him, "Who are you?" And he goes, "I'm one of the four names on this contract." And he goes, well, Jay, then let me tell you. I'm like, he didn't give you his name. This poor name's like, how did you know he was Jay?
So they get a lead on where Jim might have gone. They once again hassle the poor mechanic who says there's a farm out off Interstate 50. That's like the entirety of the directions he tells them. So they find the farm, which apparently there's just the one off of the interstate. And they find us, and in a Sherlock Holmes type moment, they find a stick and they find a ripped blouse and they put the entire thing together.
Yep. And then thankfully the little kid shows up and helps them.
He picks up a ripped blouse and says, "Hey, this could have been Terry's blouse." Yes.
And these people just left this bloody blouse and this bloody stick there. And like you say, then there's this little kid, I don't know why, but he runs away from Jim Brown, who can't catch him despite being the greatest running back in the history of the NFL.
So you had mentioned the weirdly filmed rape scene. What's especially weird about it is that there's like five guys. One of them is, is committing the assault. The other four are cheering him on. And they're giving him like words of encouragement, and one of them says something like, "You're doing great, Bobby." Like, it's really messed up.
Hey, congratulations on that rape!
Way to go!
You know, Bobby was having trouble with his sexual assaults up to this point.
it was on his annual review as something to work on. I think he's really stepped up.
I understand you were having difficulties. You know, it was something you had to work on. We put it in your file, but it's okay now.
Areas of improvement. So I think it's actually even Bobby later. This is like, this is the last one I'll drop, is that so the bad guys are holed up at this abandoned warehouse. It's really vague what's actually happening at this point in the movie. It's really late in the movie. So the guy, he has a lantern. He has like an oil lantern, and he walks over, puts the lantern down, and then standing right next to the lantern takes a whiz while talking to one of the guys. And so he's like, it's like he wanted to make sure that he was properly lit while he took a whiz, as opposed to what any other person in the world, any other guy would ever do in that situation, which is walk 3 feet away from the lantern at least. But no, he carries the lantern with him to make sure that he can create an uncomfortable moment for his coworker.
That's fantastic. So every scene has at least one or two from about 20 minutes in. You missed some good ones. I got to throw these in there. There's a point where Jim Brown and Fred Williamson each have 44 magnums, and they're just massive, right? And we talk about them, they explode cars, but you have to understand, like, literally there's a point where the two of them show up, and I count it. The four shots go off, so each of them shoots two times, and they cut to the other side, and three cars blow up off four shots. Yes. Three cars on four shots, dude, completely blow up. Then,
at one point in that big, that last big battle, I'm pretty sure a pile of old wood explodes.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't think there's anything near it that's flammable. It's a pile of pallets. That explodes into flames.
These guns are amazing. Making the Nick's point about just tossing it out of the shower even more important. That this thing could blow up anything. These guns could cause clothes to get on fire if it went off. So, and then you see later in the movie, Richard Brownsea has like a .32, and it takes him five shots to blow up a car. So he clearly should be. Switch to the .44 these other guys are carrying. None of us mentioned in any of this WTF, and I still can't believe you guys only gave it, like, what was it, a 6 and a 7? Or
an 8 and a 7, and I was adding a 10 on. I didn't actually give my score, so I was also giving it a 10.
And I can't believe they only did a 7 and 8. What about the dog?
Oh, let's, I forgot about the dog.
We already talked about the drive-in and how amazing that is, that it goes on for so long and nothing happens, and what a choice. But the dog with the cigarillo from its mouth that keeps on showing up, including at the end in their hospital room.
Does it really?
Oh, yeah. It's totally there. With the cigar. Yep.
That's awesome.
The last shot of the movie is the dog with the cigarette on a chair just in the hospital room for no reason. For no reason other than the fact that they loved the fact that they had a dog with a cigarillo hanging from its mouth.
Awesome. Well, it's the Fred Williamson dog, so, you know, it's like...
Established that it's a dog from a bar they go in earlier, and now it's all of a sudden it shows up in two other scenes with them for no reason. So, because remember, they show up the first time they show up, they walk in that bar and they get hassled. That dog is in there. So, like, that dog is worth a 15 alone. Like, make an executive decision, Nick, or sorry, make an executive decision and bump everybody to a 10.
You know, I do take off a point for incompetence, I think.
So that's what causes you take off a point in other areas for incompetence.
I would love to,
the WTF.
I think you could take off take it off for incompetence if it was Fred Williamson's first film directing, but it's like his eighth.
No, I'm happy at my 7. I really am. It's not a low WTF score.
Oh. All right.
Couldn't get much higher. All right. Our next category, and this is actually, I was going to put the dog with the cigarillo in here. Memorable moments.
Well,
the dog showing up last shot of the scene in the hospital, you have to admit.
That's pretty great, yeah.
It's pretty WTF.
I forgot that we were still scoring, actually. But, it's like, what, are we not done talking about this already? So in the case of memorable moments, now, as I've said, you know, with the blaxploitation thing, and especially bad blaxploitation, is that... they really do blend together. Like, you have a lot of the same guys, and these are four classic blaxploitation guys. And so, well, I'll always think of them as badass. There's no doubt about that. What I will remember from this movie is probably very limited. Now, I agree, like, there's certainly elements. Like, the dog with Fred Williamson's cigarillo, that's fantastic stuff. Wouldn't surprise me if I remembered that. Certainly the big guns and the blowing shit up, like, there's lots of stuff that I think could be memorable. I just don't think I'll remember it from this movie. So I'm just going with the 3.
Yeah, you sort of hit the nail on the head here. You know, if I want to see these four guys in the same movie, there's a plethora of choices. Really, my only choice is, do I want it in a Western format or in a true blaxploitation format? So I'm going a little higher because, I mean, that title is great. I remember that title every time around. So I'm going to go with, did you say a 3?
I did.
4. I'll one up you.
You know what? There's a point where Jim Kelly says the title but I never understood what he was talking about when he said it.
No,
did any of you guys understand what he was saying?
No. I put that down as a big question to ask.
But at least they referenced it. That so
that's true.
Yay that!
Yay that! Yeah.
Well, when I thought this movie was a sequel, it made perfect sense.
Well, it's called. Yeah, he says one down, two to go. In the context of the movie, it made me wonder if one of the guys was added late, like that there was only going to be the 3 of them and then round 2 got added. That's all I could think of.
See, I thought it was about the bad guys, that like there was 3 people that they had to go through to get the money or something like that.
But they hadn't taken out the first one yet.
No, yeah. For sure. So yeah, that's true.
They had taken 0 of them out at that point. So.
Yeah, I could have sworn that he said something about the other guys. but I don't know, man. I don't know.
Let's not debate the intricacies of the storyline, please.
Yeah, don't get stuck in the weeds.
Yeah, I don't know. I all I can say is for memorable moments, I do think that some of the music was kind of memorable. It was some cool music. They actually do remember that I was interested. I found the opening sequence, the fighting and all that stuff. Kind of, I don't think I remember that opening. But yeah, it doesn't hit well. There's a fight scene with Jim Kelly. I sort of remember that, though. It is hilarious that he has this fight scene, and I'm pretty sure he gets his ass kicked for like 70% of it. So like, I'm pretty sure the guy he's fighting was winning that fair and square. So yeah, it's pretty low. I'll say a 4.
I'm going just a touch higher because I'm a master of gun fu is going to stick with me.
Oh, we never talk about that. That is unbelievable. How could we forget that? We should rename it Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
That tag is going to stick with me. You texted that, but I totally didn't understand. I didn't understand the context of it because I hadn't seen the movie, and you said Gung Fu.
Did I?
Yes. Yeah. Totally. So yeah. That's
totally good. Well, yeah, I couldn't follow it at all. So
that's what he said. Gung Fu.
He says Gun Fu.
I think he just didn't hear it. He's not much of a. He doesn't pronounce his G's very strongly.
But he was holding a gun.
He was holding a gun. Why wouldn't he say? Why would he say Gung Fu?
Let's talk to see.
why on earth would he say that? For one thing, Gung Fu is a real term that's an alternate name for Kung Fu. So that he could have said that, but it doesn't make any logical sense. And so he's just referencing the gun in his hand.
Well, either way, Gung Fu Electric Boogaloo would be a great title for this show.
Well, we'll re-record all the ones up till now then. So I'm going with a 6. Our last category is called.
No,
crazy.
We have to go into that scene. You have to explain that scene a little
bit.
Oh, better.
God.
Really? I don't even remember the scene, honestly. I just wrote down Gun Fu with an exclamation mark.
Okay, so Fred Williamson is in the dojo because he's looking for the referee of this. Or is it Williamson? Yeah, it's Williamson. He's looking for the referee of the tournament to try and find out what goes on. I don't know why. And the guy's like, oh, no, I'm cleaning the place. And don't bother me. And so Fred Williamson does a little martial arts move, but he does this leg trip on him. So then this other martial artist guy shows up and picks up Fred Williamson. And he's like, I'm going to show you some Kung Fu. And Fred Williamson pulls out his gun and puts it in his belly and says, you think you know Kung Fu? Well, I know Gung Fu. And the guy lets him go. So the great part about this is that guy that we're talking about looks like King Kong Bundy. Like,
I thought it was King Kong Bundy, actually.
It was not King Kong Bundy, but it was a guy who was like 6'2".
I meant to look it up.
250 pounds. And if this guy knows one move of Kung Fu, it would be the slowest. He's the least athletic Kung Fu master you've ever seen in your life. This big, bald, fat guy. I'm like, this makes no sense.
That's awesome. I was going to look him up, actually, because I thought it was King Kong Bundy.
King Kong Bundy is just some guy.
just some guy. Turns out if you're a big fat guy and you shave your head, you look like King Kong Bundy. That's just the way that goes.
King Kong Bundy at this point in time would have been not even in the WWE. Like, this is 1982. So this is before he was even, like, he probably was like 19 years old at this point.
He still looked exactly the same.
Yeah, pretty much. That's true.
All right. Our final category, crazy concept.
I can't explain the concept, so I think it must be pretty crazy. I'm going to give it a 6 just on the fact that I didn't understand it.
Ooh. I like your logic on the just giving up and throwing out a mediocre number.
It's true. I've given up.
You know what? I'm going to throw it a 5 for exactly the same reason.
Sure, what the hell? 4 for the exact same reason.
It's called 1 down, 2 to go, and there's 4 lead characters. 8.
Uh, Oh man.
All right, let's close up the CBS mailbag here. All right, so that's the end of scoring. Anyone want to last minute changes? Anything? Okay.
Last minute changes? No, though. Though I do like that at the beginning of the karate tournament, the television announcer was talking about it. Spent the whole time talking about how the fight is making Jim Kelly in the corner react instead of calling the fight, which is really not a very good way to call a fight.
That's excellent color commentary. This is one of the broadest ranges I've seen on the show for scoring, though. Because we each give a rating at a 50. Stan is at the low end at 26, and I'm at the high end at 43.
Holy crap.
That is one of the broadest ranges we've had on the show.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this was just a shitty blaxploitation movie.
And to me, this was an awesome shitty blaxploitation.
What are the other two scores, then, out of curiosity?
27, so Nick and Stan were almost exactly the same, and 31 for Jack.
So, yes, you were in the...
I'm a liar on this score. Every season, we have six secret modifiers. This film does get one of them. It gets a bonus for what we call mustache pals. The lead mustache is joined by many other mustaches in this movie.
Plenty of mustache.
Which brings us to a grand total of 64.5. Which puts it right along with Up the Creek and American Shaolin, just shy of Breaking Two Electric Boogaloo.
Interesting. It's the WTFs are what carried this. Like I think if you rate that, it's probably scores in the top 15.
It'll be pretty high. 35 out of 40 for the what the fuck moment. That's pretty high.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Well, it's going to be very interesting because we've had our first experience of the blaxploitation, our first taste. And next up, we can go to move to Big City Blues, which is another exploitation movie of some kind, I'm sure.
Birdsploitation.
I just want to say, Jim, as for looking up that guy, good luck. Right now, I'm looking at the cast and like 30 characters in the cast name is just Mario Thug. And I assume he's one of those. Like, so good luck figuring out which one was Mario Thug.
He's not in as guy cleaning dojo.
No, there's no guy cleaning. There's nothing about the referee, which was what the other guy was, and nothing about Kung Fu Master, which is what he apparently was. None of that. No, it's just Mario Thug, and it's just a ton of them.
Yes.
So if you want to go through all those...
There's some backtracking.
There is no doubt that they didn't put a lot of time into certain elements of this movie. So,
I love this.
Seasons...
I love the WTF.
Is it Mario or Mario?
Fuck off. We're not getting into that.
No, I'm just saying, that if they were all trying to be Mario Brothers, that would explain the hat.
Before Mario Brothers, I think even came out, isn't it?
Yes, that means that Mario Brothers is based on this. That's what I'm saying.
That would make this even more impressive.
Yeah,
that would be memorable.
All right, close stuff here.
All right, season 7 of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo presenting the free mustache rides is going to move on to Big City Blues and a little bit of Burt Reynolds action. That'll be next episode. So I am completely looking forward to getting into that. So Jim, tell us where the folks can find us.
Fantastic. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And for everything else, visit our podcast sponsors, We Talk Podcasts. Their website, wetalkpodcast.com, is the home of the Octagon, where you can look at the ongoing list of our Search for the Ultimate B-Movie, and you can sort that list by every category as well as their final total. And they have a Facebook and a Twitter as well.
And if you want to go watch everything that Jack talked about, then go to Tubi, because man, oh man, this, all season on Tubi, so it's great. And
every
it's
season
so...
from now on, maybe on Tubi.
it works in that regard. There's no question for it.
This
so.
Movie makes a very enjoyable listen.
All right, let's wrap this sucker up so that we can get out of here. For Jim, for Jack, for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
The deadliest sport in the world meant big money, and big money meant the mob. But when the mob tried to muscle in on the brothers muscled right back in spades. Jim Brown. Fred Williamson. Jim Kelly. Richard Roundtree. Four dudes that just don't pay to mess with in one down. Two to go.
You may be good in kung fu, but I'm an expert in gun fu.
One down, two to go.